Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. In this episode, we'll talk about closers, who's been good, who's been not so good, who's for real, who's not, and who will likely turn it around. We try and answer the question, which closers can I count on and how do I know? But before we get to all of that, Alexander, how you doing?
Not too bad. It is quite nice here in DC and has been to kind of start out the week, which is, just always nice. So, baseball's an outside sport. I realize we always talk about the weather.
yeah, right. We do every time. It's okay, though, because the last time it wasn't so nice in DC. It was thundering. And as I was editing, I could hear that we could hear it. It was definitely weathering there. So I'm glad that the weather is
nicer. I bring this
up
for a very particular reason. Over the weekend, it was still not nice. And we had a couple Bowie Bay Sox games get rained out. And I was planning on going to one because I have this sinking feeling that some of the better players for the Bowie Bay Sox are going to get promoted to AAA Norfolk soon. Mm. And they are going to be on the road for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm
worried I'm not going to be able to see Adley. So we'll see.
Got to get out. Got to go.
Yeah, I'm busy for the next two weekends anyway. But, as soon as they're back in town, I'm really excited to go see them. So
book it now. Make sure you get in.
I've got my eye on a Wednesday game, actually.
Nice. Nothing like midweek baseball if you can get there. I love those summertime games. Very lucky as a teacher to be able to have that time in the summer to be able to go. And there's just something special about like, I think a midweek game. It brings me back to my adolescent days going to Paw Sox games as well. Wrote a whole thing about that. You can find it on Pitcher List. No need to dwell on that at this point, but it does. There's a little bit of a nostalgic thing and a romantic thing, I think, to those midweek summer sun's coming down, lights are going on kind of games. Pretty cool. So I hope you get there before all of the talent is
They've got a lot of guys who are in high A also who might make it to double A soon. Grayson Rodriguez just got promoted, so now they've got DL Hall and Grayson Rodriguez with Adley Rutschman behind the plate. They are like a pretty good double A team right now.
I would think so, yeah.
Notably, the Norfolk Tides, who are the Orioles triple A team, are not good. That's what happens when you're trying to develop talent rather than just like keeping it sitting and ready to go.
There's been a big shift though over the last, I don't even know, 10-15 years. I remember, like I said, when I was going to those Paw Sox games, a lot of the talent lived at AAA, and now it almost feels like AAA is the holding tank and AA is the development for a lot
of teams. That does seem like it's kind of a thing, because then like once you know a guy's actually good, you know, you still have that like, we can screw around with the contract move of like, oh, he still hasn't seen AAA yet, even if AAA is just a lot of guys that are
must work on defense.
You know, or a lot of pitchers who are kind of like pitching for their, yeah, I'm still healthy and viable despite being, I guess 34 is not even old, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, right. Like I said, a holding tank kind of. So, anyway. We are going to talk about closers on this episode, so I think it's probably best if we jump in. And I can't start a closers episode without talking about Mariano Rivera. It kills me as a Red Sox fan to talk about a Yankee with admiration, but how can you not? So my question for you, for our bell ringer, is how in the world was Mariano Rivera so dominant with basically one pitch that the entire stadium knew was coming and they still couldn't hit it?
So I want to just note that Mariano Rivera debuted in the 1995 season, which is technically after I was born, in that I was born in 1995,
but technically
February. I cannot say that I was really all that like watching of many of his most important innings. But
I love it when you make me feel old, Alexander. It's fantastic, because I was 15 when he made his debut. So there you go, a little fast math for all y'all.
I think I can really appreciate a handful of things about him, though. First and foremost, I really love cutters. As a pitch, I really, really like cutters. I often joke that sliders are just like cutter changeups, which is like not fully, but it's like somewhat true. And I really love that as a pitch. the thing is, like, really, it's not quite a slider in terms of movement profile, but it's like, you know, they're cousins. And if you had to pick one pitch to be the only one you threw, it's probably the one I would pick. There are a couple of relievers who get by throwing like exclusively a slider, and they have a fastball that they will throw faster than that. I think, though, that if you're going to be like an idealized version, a cutter makes a whole lot of sense because it's really hard to hit. It can be thrown very hard. So you get kind of like the movement profile that's kind of usual, because like not a whole lot of guys are like straight cutter guys. Kenley Jansen actually is like a modern reliever who's pretty close, but like not quite right, obviously. He has like secondaries that he incorporates in as well. But, you know, people don't get used to seeing it. It's fast, so timing it compared to other relievers isn't like exactly easy. You know, it's just got a bunch of really good things going for it. He was also just really good at like location. So like that's part of it. You know, he's a guy who walked for his career 2 batters per nine. That's a career walk rate. Let me go ahead and pull that, of 5.6%. That's definitely below the average. I mean, lower than the MLB average. Like that's above average in terms of skill. But he was only like a career 23% strikeout rate guy. The whole goal was to frustrate you into hitting it into the ground.
Breaking the bat.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the sort of thing where like, if you can get your location, you can be a little bit deceptive. You can stick around for a while. And I think that's definitely it was. You know, there are some other pods I like to listen to who like to jokingly refer to the entire league's like spate of like relievers is just all Jose Alvarado's who just throw it 100 miles an hour right down the middle of the plate and hope for the best. And you can definitely see how a guy who was not that in many of the best ways stuck around for a while. So people should throw more cutters. Sliders should be referred to as cutter changeups once in a while. Especially if you're kidding, like I always am. And you know, I never rooted for the Yankees a single day of my life. I never had an allegiance necessarily as a kid growing up in Dallas, but there was no part of me that just wanted to root for the Yankees because it felt good to be a winner. Because the thing is, all the Yankees fan kids in my grade were really annoying. So, you know, I learned early.
It was a social thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Rivera, I think, you know, obviously a generational talent. And maybe using him as like the example for anything is a little silly, but definitely couldn't start a closer episode and not at least kind of mention him and acknowledge his unbelievable dominance. I do wonder a little bit if he were to debut this year and wasn't throwing 100, you know, would he be given the same opportunities? I mean, you'd think so because he was so effective, but I don't know. He doesn't really fit the mold as you're talking about.
We'll talk about some guys later on today for sure that are in some ways modeled after him and that like they wanted to pitch like him. Probably. You can only assume, right?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Right. If you're a kid coming up, that's who you're going to emulate. If you're going to be a closer. Absolutely.
I do think that you're going to notice what category they fall into. I'm not going to tell you who they are just yet, but let's say that I think that his mold is something that people should want, and it is not an easy one to fit into. But even just an approximation of in some way is something that is worth chasing. And it's an easy...
Maybe it's just so hard to be effective that way that if you can throw 100, you might as well just do that.
I don't know. I think that's the sort of thing where it's like, you know, if you can throw 100, you're going to make it in the bigs. You may not still be in the bigs when you're not throwing 100.
When your UCL finally cries uncle.
Exactly. but like, you know, isn't that the goal though for a lot of people? They want to play professional baseball.
Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah, they get to wear the uni and get out on the field. So that's true. That's fair. It's a fair point. All right, let's move into our number of the week. And this is interesting, and I think it bridges the gap between what we talked about in our last episode and what we're going to be talking about in this episode, because I'm going to bring up some ERA and ERA estimator numbers. I want to tell you the number is 2.05, and I found this to be really interesting, and I'm just going to let you kind of wax poetic a little bit about what this means or doesn't mean, or which elements you like and which you don't, and I kind of re-explain the construct of some of these stats just as kind of a refresher, but also a segue into what it is that we're going to be talking about today. So Liam Hendricks, ERA, xERA, and xFIP are all exactly the same at 2.05. Exactly the same as of the recording of this episode, Tuesday night, 8:33 Eastern Daylight Savings Time. All exactly the same. So what does that mean, and how does that factor into what he's doing on the field?
Matt, you're clearly cherry picking by leaving out his other estimators. Duh.
There was one that didn't match. Yeah,
you have me wanting to pull this up, so I probably will. And yeah. But obviously, the fact that you have, you know, like the stars aligning in this sort of way is meaningful in one particular way. It means that they agree. And that makes it more and more unlikely that they are lying, right? Basically, sure. If you want to answer the question, has Liam Hendricks been good? The answer looks like yes. Liam Hendricks has been good.
Yeah, right.
I don't think that's shocking analysis to anyone. I do like these tools for different reasons. So you brought up XFIP. I don't like that one. I think we talked about this very lightly, and I had someone like comment and like asked us if we were mean enough to XFIP.
Mr. Max,
thank you, Max, for that. The reason why XFIP, I'm gonna kind of like trash this first before I kind of like get into the other ones that I'm gonna like more and talk more about today, is like, especially for relievers where like the samples are gonna be really small, you want to pick out the things that are absolutely the best at telling you about the future, while also giving you an accurate picture of the past. XFIP is not as good as its competitors at telling you about the future, while also not being very good at telling you about the past. Basically,
super useful.
So we started last week with FIP, which is basically like, how good is your ERA if the only things we know are home runs, strikeouts, and walks? And it's really good at being accurate about how good you have been, and then correcting for kind of like some of the noise. That's why we like FIP as a how good has this guy been, and then we can kind of tinker with it based on home park, etc., etc. XFIP takes that same idea, substitute home runs for fly balls, assumes constant home run to fly ball rate, which is wrong because some people get just absolutely hammered harder than others, and some people give up fly balls on purpose. Right? If you're not giving up fly balls on purpose, then you're gonna have a low fly ball rate, but you probably also, you do give them up, things might be bad. Whereas if you're giving up a lot of pop-ups, or kind of like, it's technically a fly ball, but it's only about 250 feet pretty frequently, that will mean that your FIP probably looks a little bit worse. So, you know, different guys can be trying to do different things, and park means something there. So basically, I just take XFIP, shake its hand, wish it well. And it's nice to know, though, in this case, though, that it happens to be aligning with both ERA and XERA, which is, by and large, a pretty good descriptive stat. I don't actually know as much as I wish I did about how predictive it is. But, you know, it's based off of StatCast, like XWOBA. It basically turns that into a number that tells us how good an ERA would be. I kind of like it as an idea where it does its job as XWOBA, for like trying to estimate WOBA first, and then basically just rescale it. So it's not like perfect, because it's not trying to be perfect in this application, but basically it's our best run at like, here's what the StatCast said this guy should be. And then we also looked at a couple other things. Sierra, we looked at in a little bit more detail. I like Sierra a lot of as like the thing that's semi-complicated in terms of the numbers. If you hated the quadratic equation in like algebra 2, I'm just going to say that like that is really simple compared to Sierra, which is kind of impossibly esoteric on purpose, because it's really good at telling us about the future as non-StatCast. It's not old. Like, come on, this thing is like still kind of like young enough that like it might want to have like a Transformers themed birthday party. Like, Sierra is not that old or anything, right?
I like the context there. That's helpful.
But still, it's a stat that tries to like do more mathematically, which makes it a little bit harder to kind of like convince people of. But it's pretty good about predictability. And basically, I like to say, if you're going to try to make a new ERA estimator and your goal is to predict the future, you have to like, to clear the bar for me to care, you got to be better than Sierra. If you can't clear that, then the idea you're starting with probably isn't strong enough, and you need to change things.
And why, if you're not as good as something that already exists, the community doesn't really need
it. It's not just that, but maybe it's like you've got something and like you just haven't like built it properly, but like the logic is good, right? I would say like Sierra is my, like, your logic being good has to at least get you over this hump. And then maybe if you have like some weird denominators and stuff, like you could have a little more fuzz around the edges. But yeah. So to get back to the question here that I think you asked, is Liam Hendricks good? Yes. But I would care more about the fact that his xERA is good compared to other things.
I just thought it was fascinating that they were all the exact same number. I don't know if that happens normally or if it's because something else we're going to talk about here in a second is that relievers have much smaller sample sizes compared to starters. And so maybe it's just a factor of that. I don't know. But I, as a non-numbers guy, as somebody who doesn't look at numbers and read them like a book, I thought it was kind of interesting that all of those agreed with each other. Not even like closely, like exactly.
For the permanent record, his 2.62 FIP as of our recording, still good. Let me pull that Sierra.
Did you hear that, Library of Congress? That's for the permanent record.
Sierra 1.52. Yeah, so I would say Liam Hendricks probably still gonna be good tomorrow. Is my best guess. Yeah.
I mean, again, I wasn't bringing it up to say like, oh, I'm worried about him. I just thought it was absolutely fascinating that those numbers were all exact, especially after what we talked about last week, and how we get to those numbers in different ways. For them to be exactly the same, I thought was like I said, interesting.
I'm just messing with you because it's fun.
Of course, yeah. Why not? Why wouldn't you? All right, let's get to our central question for this particular episode, which is, we're going to boil it down basically to this: which closers can I count on and how do I know? Not necessarily the easiest question to answer with certainty. Obviously, closers are difficult to nail down every single year in terms of who am I going to draft, who's going to have the job, who's going to keep the job. Even the role itself has evolved and changed so much even over the last 5-10 years in baseball. So it's hard to nail down, but we're going to try. And by we, I mean you. So I'm going to start with this question. Why would relievers, just to start, not necessarily closers, but relievers in general, what challenges do they present that we don't have when we're trying to analyze and evaluate starting pitchers?
So one of the things about being a reliever, is that you often get there. Maybe it's just pure stamina, but often like, if you're a two pitch guy, you end up in the bullpen, right? Which means that night to night, you're gonna have some more volatility. A lot of these guys do. You're gonna have it, or you're gonna not. I remember watching Emmanuel Clase just not have it on the night of the Wade Miley no hitter and turn a nil-nil ninth inning ball game into a 3-run. We know how this is going to end, and thank God it's not going to extras situation. And he's been good this year, but he just had a night where he throws really hard. And that's another part of it, is like a lot of the more erratic guys end up there. And then we combine that with much smaller samples. So the possibility that things just might not click once in a while, widen the error bars and then give us less time. So typically, if we're talking about like how long it takes to like start to trust pitcher stuff, like we're about to creep up on like 60 games here within the next few days. So like end of this week. Or so this weekend, we're going to be able to get just a flood of think pieces and stuff about, like, the 60 grain season.
This season compared to last, right?
I'll be part of it.
I love how you say it with disgust and then just jump in with both feet.
Yeah.
Oh, this is gross. And I'm going to be part of it.
Yeah, of course. It's going to be just so much content. I'm actually really interested to see what everyone busts out. But we're also going to see some dumb stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
We say that, though. 60 innings was about enough time last year for us to start to believe whether or not a starting pitcher was good or not. Like, when we talk about
we're games or innings? I just want to clarify.
In terms of the number of innings that starters were throwing last year, like, we could.
Okay, so 60.
No, not 60 innings. 60 games worth of innings, whatever that is for like a starting pitcher.
All right. So we're just gonna make this very crystal clear, since we both bounce back and forth, right? It's like 60 games worth of pitcher innings.
For starters, though, that turned out to be about 60. Was the thing. Yeah. Right.
We're
talking about 50 to 60.
You go every fifth day. You pitch about five innings.
Yeah. There you have it. Exactly. Like most starting pitchers are pitching somewhere between 150 and 180 innings in 162 games. Wow, that worked.
Right.
We got around 10 starts or so from a lot of guys, and it was about if they pitched the whole year, and they were like the same guy the whole year, then we could start to believe it. Remember, like we weren't sure at the end of last year if Corbin Burnes was legit or not.
Turns out, yes.
So think about that. That number of innings, roughly 60 or so, is how many we would get from a reliever in a full season. We were getting like 15 to 22-ish innings from a lot of relievers last year. We are sitting somewhere in that range still for a lot of guys.
That, even if you add last season to the first 60 games of this season, you're still not at an actual full baseball season.
Liam Hendricks, in the past two seasons combined, through tonight, through right the second, has pitched 47.1 innings. Now, there are some reasons to trust in who he is. And we have seen a lot of kind of like the sausage getting made through Codify's Twitter account, actually, because they love to show off how good a job they did with our boy. It is just night and day. Just want to note here, like, just because it's so, so ridiculous. In 2018, and basically every other year before that, you know, Liam Hendricks had a K minus BB rate that topped out about 20, which is really good, by the way. But, you know, he was hitting 11% difference in 2018. He was a guy who's like FIP or XFIP or whatever else, kind of like would wobble between, like, there were some seasons with like high fives. There were some seasons in the threes and twos, but he wasn't like truly who he is today.
Yeah.
He's been like a 2 ERA or better guy for three seasons running now. We can kind of believe in that at this point, right? But it's taken a while. There are still people heading into this draft season who are like, yeah, who knows? Maybe he'll suck all of a sudden. There are some people last year when they're drafting him who are like, yeah, it's 1 year and he sucked for a while. We have so many roadblocks to knowing whether or not we should care about whether a guy is good. And then there's just like the dumb roto stuff about, like, is a guy going to be a closer and is he going to be good at closing and is he going to get opportunities and all of that, just really frustrating stuff. Like, I'm talking, it's either frustrating by design and you like the randomness, or it's just frustrating and you hate it. And I think that, hopefully we get to actually talk about that a little bit more towards the end, but I just want to say either way, if you're playing in a roto league, there's just a lot of reasons why, evaluating all this stuff is so difficult. Alex Fast has written plenty about how, like, we draft closers really poorly and we're really bad at evaluating value. I tend to draft in the way that he prescribes, even if I sometimes disagree with all of the methodology. If I disagree with some of the methodology about how you'd measure that, because, like, at the end of the day, like, we can make a couple exceptions for a handful of guys, right? Like, was there a closer that you really wanted to target in drafts this year?
No, because I hate I hate it. So I'm in that camp. I actually wound up with a bunch of really good closers in places, and maybe it's just because overall people are kind of fed up and they fell.
You mean like high ADP guys, but you still got them put?
Like 150? Yeah, like the haters. Okay. You know, I got Hader in a couple of places. Jansen. You know, the going into drafts, there was like maybe five guys that you could feel confident were going to have the role and probably keep it all year. So it was pretty slim pickings. I think a lot of people like went away from it, which is why I wound up with them. But normally I don't target closers. I just take what I can get and try and be really active on waivers.
Yeah, I was really into the way that Oakland had been managing their bullpen even before Hendricks's breakout. And I was just so excited. And I cannot even remember the name of the dude who I was spending like pick 125 on, who was supposed to be Oakland's closer. and that's a little bit embarrassing, but I'm just gonna walk straight past it because I think that's where we're at.
Well, but that's the thing with closers, and I think that's it underscores the difficulty and the challenge. And yeah, sure, some people might like that because it's random and it gives them a chance to separate from the pack if they happen to be right. But I hate it because it just gives me stress when I'm trying to construct my team. How much do I want to invest in this spot? And if I completely ignore it, that's not great either. So I don't know. It's part of the deal. I get it. I'm not angry with it. It's not my favorite element. I don't like that for steals either. I don't like steals for the exact same reason.
Cool. So with all in mind, we are still in a league, are together, and we are in many leagues separately. We have to care about them. And I also will say, as a non-fantasy entity, I am super fascinated in relievers. I really like baseball players who exist in the extremes, right? Like, the dudes who are league average in a lot of ways tend to be really disinteresting to me, even if they're like fascinating people. I like the dudes who are like doing something that's way out there, right? It's like there's a reason we like Williams Osterdio. There's a reason why I like Joey Gallo. Those are very opposite people in terms of approach, right? We end up with a lot of that when we look at relievers' arsenals and their stats and everything else. Like, there are no days, just a joy, right?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty fascinated. This was an idea. I'm going to give credit here to Kyle Brown, one of our pitcherless colleagues, does the On the Farm pod, hosts that, does a great job. And he posed a question that totally fascinated me in terms of like a new stat that would better capture relievers and a larger swath of relievers so that we weren't so reliant on the save. For some of you, that might sound awesome. And for some of you, that might sound awful. But it really intrigues me. And how can we have, I think he posed it as kind of like a quality outing or a quality appearance or something that's kind of like a corresponding stat to a quality start. And I if we could come up with something like that personally, I would think it was super
cool. I'm going to make us feel really bad now. So I don't know if it was literally Nate Silver, but there is a 538 piece from a while ago. It's about Goose Gossage and basically about the goose egg.
Yeah, goose egg.
And I think that's kind of like in line here, right?
It's similar. I don't think it's perfect, like, but it's, it's definitely capturing the essence of what I'm getting at. And I love the thought process behind it because there's a lot of value in relievers that aren't closers in real baseball. There's a reason they roster so many of them. And we're completely missing that and overemphasizing closers and saves and all of that. And it's just, I don't know. I'd love to see something else emerge, but
yeah,
I digress.
So let's go overemphasize him some more now. We got a couple different buckets here, right? That we want to look at. The first one that I was really, really psyched about, were the guys who we didn't expect to be super good. But have actually been really valuable this year. Because I want to talk about the people who are exciting first. And there's a guy that you had actually kind of just brought up before we got started, and I think I'm immediately gravitated to this guy a lot whenever I'm writing up my bullpen depth charts article that I write every week. And that's
Craig Kimbrel.
My brain that's just melted Craig Kimbrel. There. Just and like a lot of batters that's against totally him. Fine.
That's why we have show notes.
Yes, sorry. I'm like, my ability to read actually went away.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's why they're there for me to back you up. That was not me making fun of you. That was because I know that my brain does the same thing. Yeah, I think he's fascinating because he's been both like the best closer in baseball and somebody that you could easily have cut at varying points of his closer career. And I would love your take on what it is that he's doing now that he wasn't doing before.
I also like him as kind of like a little bit of a case study, but I want to say just like as it will go for like pretty much every guy we're going to talk about today, everything is so erratic that the cases do not apply to each other so frequently. That's kind of like going to be the gist. I want to make sure I just drop that down and then just point at that blob of goo frequently for the rest of the day. So Kimbrel has had some funky things happen. Like, remember that thing where he kind of just like didn't sign with a team, showed up to the Cubs camp in the middle of the year and then wasn't good, and then kind of wasn't good again last year? I think that it's really easy to imagine that would maybe screw with your ability to be a professional baseball player. So I do think that that's like a not insignificant part of the reason why he hasn't always been super good. I think velocity has also been a thing for him, and that's actually one of the things that we can kind of point to for everyone in the closer business, is that more than anywhere else, you know, if you're relying more on stuff than on raw command, your just tiny differences in how good your stuff is will really greatly impact how accurate you're going to be. So,
well, your margin for error is way, way less too.
So if we look at like his average pitch velocity by year, right? 2017. He was throwing, you know, somewhere above like 98 miles an hour for his average fastball, right? 2018, I think he was still kind of like pretty good in 2018, but like not fully himself. It dipped down to 97. 2019, that was that he didn't get everything started early enough year, 96. Last year, and also this year, he's been back up to 97. So, you know, you can also think like as a pitcher kind of ages, if you can kind of like stick at like a velocity level and not kind of like have issues with, am I actually throwing it as hard as I want to? I have to imagine there's just going to be a little bit more of like, I know who I am and I can just locate that better. So I just want to say that's part of it for sure. We've also seen him like kind of as things have ticked from that really rough 2019, he's been throwing fewer fastballs. He's just been throwing more curveballs. He's gone like pretty much fully four seam curveball. Like he was a guy who would throw an occasional sinker for a minute, but he's just completely scrapped that. And, you know, at this point he's throwing like 40%, like 42-ish% curveballs. I think that's where he's at right now. Yeah. 41-ish. Mm.
Yeah. That wasn't his bread and butter right. when he was originally.
Yeah. Eating. You know, he was more of like a, you know, like 27-28% like a curveball guy. So like you see a guy who's aging, going more to secondaries, but his fastball's also just been more reliable. That's like the analysis that's not really analysis for a closer, but you might think like, how many different guys out there who have had different blips on the radar where a pitch just hasn't been itself, or like, you know, whether that's fastball or, you know, maybe just a secondary kind of like slips in it a little bit because, you know, you stop gripping it the same way or whatever it is. And for Kimbrel, it's just like things got normal and like talented guy figured out how to pitch well in those circumstances.
Yeah. You wonder too, or at least I do. I don't know if you do. When you start bouncing around teams, I feel like certain coaches feel like they have to put their stamp on you, no matter who you are, right? And a little tweak here, a little arm angle there, a little mechanical blip here and there for somebody who is, again, making their money in the ninth where there's less margin for error and mistakes are amplified by a lot, and then that can get inside your head, right? I do wonder if bouncing around team to team and somebody getting a hold of him and saying, no, I want you to do it this way, and that just didn't work, has anything to do with it. I mean, maybe Craig will come on the pod and let us know. But
yeah, I hope so.
In the absence of that, it's only conjecture, obviously. But I do wonder how much of that tinkering kind of gets in the way of some of this stuff too.
Now, I'm gonna be like super self-aware here. I do think that there's definitely this like cultural thing among dudes who care about sports, and this occurs just as much for athletes as I'm sure it is for very non-athletes, or, you know, I think you can occasionally slot some coaches into that role where like the most interesting thing that you can be is a person with an opinion who someone hasn't heard before, right? So this is why you end up with dudes who will really loudly say things like, you know, Tom Brady sucks, or, you know, like Clayton Kershaw was never that good, right? And I think that like one, you will probably hear some of those takes about Kimbrel and they're wrong, but also you have to wonder like how many coaches out there just really think that they know way more than everybody else and are willing to kind of just like tinker around like this in some ways that aren't always perfect. That's kind of the argument then for like the more data informed thing is like the dude can have that personality, right, but actually just have something to back it up rather than be like, no, you should be throwing a stiff wrist football slider or something stupid like that.
Cause it's new and I made it up and I need to make it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not saying that's it. No, to kind of like say like, here's the other half of things. Here we have Kimbrel. He's done 20 innings, right? But one of the things about pitchers is that once the year gets started, you know who a guy is, what his velocity looks like, who he's trying to be. Things actually settle in rather quickly. So it's like last year's results versus the same number of results this year. Those this year results are something that we can trust with a whole lot more certainty, even though they're still not great, as long as you're mostly looking at the more predictive strikeout and walk driven stuff, and then just kind of like keeping an eye on the more contact focused stuff. And by any account you're going to look at, you know, Kimbrel has been really good this year. He's got, I'm going to say this out loud and I'm not going to believe it, a 42.4% strikeout rate, which is his best since 2017 when he struck out 49.6% of batters with the boss. were you alive when that happened? Do you remember this?
I was, yeah.
Was the 2017 season good for the Red Sox? Wait, that was the Astros year, right?
It was, I think it was the Astros. They were pretty good. I don't know. Couple of baseball guys not knowing baseball.
I just want to say, like, just really ridiculous is actually what I want to get back to here. But, like, he's getting back to being like that. Like, his 32.9% K-BB rate right now. Like, he obviously achieved that in 2017, but he's only topped that mark twice in his career. So, like, by that mark, this is, like, on... He's showing, like, the third best by year version of himself. Not necessarily going to sustain, but, you know, his home run per nine right now, which is not a perfect stat, but it's kind of indicative, is one of the lowest of his career. Is it going to sustain? Probably not, but hey, the ball's been dejuiced. So I just want to say, like, all of the going forward stuff looks really good for him. So he's a guy who has been good. He's made some changes we can believe in. All the narrative is there. The stats back up a sustainable version of success. And he's not just like succeeding strictly because, you know, he's gotten the ball to be hit hard into a right fielder's glove. So I want to say.
Yeah, right.
The full picture of the sort of stuff that we would hope to do for a closer, right? And, you know, like, kind of the last piece of the puzzle is, like, have the Cubs been good enough? Yeah, mostly. Their division is not good. They have a winning record. The only thing they really don't have is a true ace, I guess.
Well, that's where you get into the difference between somebody who's really good and what kind of save opportunities are they even going to have, right? And that's something that's way beyond that pitcher's control. Talk a little bit about Mark Melancon, maybe like the shorter version, before we get into the opposite side of this particular coin. What's up with him?
He's been exceptionally lucky in terms of opportunities, but the Padres are also really good. I want to say just a couple other weird things. So the Padres offense hasn't been like stupid outstanding all of the time, but they have a really good deep like pitching staff, right? They've had a pretty good bullpen, even though everyone's been hurt all year. So you may think, like, how are they winning their games? They're not always, though they are frequently, but they're not always winning like 11-4 or something like that, right? So that version of being good also tends to lend itself to a few more what you would call save opportunities, even if some of them have been 2 or 3 run opportunity like saves. But they're letting him pitch frequently. They're frequently getting opportunities. He's been the only guy. Is he going to get this many chances going forward? I'd say that there's a little bit of like luck, but he's also in like the ideal of all ideal circumstances. So I just want to say, like, that's the first thing. That's how you get to 17 saves through the not even 60, like 55 games. Like, the dude's just been really, really lucky in that regard. He's also been, by pretty much every measure, the Mariano Rivera version of good. Who is Mark Melancon? He's a command cutter guy whose cutter command looks good right now.
Wow, I can't believe you just used Mark Melancon and Mariano Rivera. They are not the same guy. Non-ironically.
But you can see how someone who's trying to be that has a really good year where things
right, have, as a mold, as a model.
Let's see if he can do it for 20 more years, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. 20 years, I don't even know how old he'd be at that point.
Don't make me answer that question. but yeah, no, he's been really, really exceptional at inducing weak contact. He's been, for a guy who, like, also tends to kind of like limit locks and all that, gets actually a fair number of strikeouts. It's not like an exceptional, but for a guy who gets like mid 20 strikeouts, his like 50% or so of balls being like weakly hit, like I'm talking like hard hit rate on StatCast, but like let's take it under 95 out of PAs, he's gonna like half of his batters faced are turning their opportunity into just like a ground out, or not necessarily a ground out, but you know what I mean, right? Like a weak hit ball and that's really good. He's doing like the combination of strikeouts and weaks at
if
really
it's,
high.
Yeah, if it's a repeatable skill rather than just dumb luck, that's the
yeah, exactly.
Right?
And he's shown that a little bit before. His pitch mix would tell us that he needs to be doing that correctly, right? If you're throwing the hit them into the ground weekly pitches, that's happening. So, yeah, I would say like. Is he going to be the greatest closer of all time? No, but I would say I'm not like looking to trade high immediately on him because he's probably still going to be one of the 5 best fantasy closers in baseball for the rest of the year by virtue of playing for the San Diego Padres and pitching reasonably well.
And having those opportunities, exactly. Right. That makes sense. All right, let's go to the other side of the coin and some of the guys who we thought were going to be amazing and have not. Let's start with Will Smith. I think that's a great place to start with that yin to the yang. Or
yeah, it's funny how they've been kind of like stuck together and then they get separated a little bit. And the guy who I don't think most of us would have like bet being the more valuable one has been more valuable. And here we have Will Smith, the baseball reliever version, being Okay, so he got dropped in this 10-league or 10-team league that I'm in, which kind of confused me, actually. It's like, he's always in my write-ups. He's getting a lot of strikeouts. And I realized he had, like, out of 5 games, he'd given up an earned run in, like, 3 of them. And, you know, people just rage drop, right? Like,
yeah.
If you play daily, it's way easier to do that than weekly, where you're like, oh, yeah, you know, he always gives up, like, an earned run or 2 a week. And you're like, but he's still got some saves and stuff, right? But he got dropped in this league. And I was an idiot and I didn't pick him up in time. I can't remember. I think this is one of those where, like, it was just waiver priority. I didn't try to use my waiver priority on him. It got cute and he got picked up.
Yeah, yeah.
He was carrying like a mid 4s ERA at that point. He did not deserve to have a mid 4s ERA at that point. Yeah. All of the strikeout and walk sort of numbers looked really good for Will Smith at that point. I know, because after I didn't pick him up, I went and checked. Because, again, I make great choices. So I want to, like...
Yeah, you wanted to instantly...
Yeah, so I want to pull out a couple just things that are funny for him, right? So he's, at this point, a couple more appearances. It just takes so little time. He's down to a 4.05 ERA. And he's got a... Let's just cite a bunch of numbers and interpret them after the fact. A 3.09x ERA. A 2.42 FIP. He's got a 3.66x FIP, whatever, but that's still lower than his current ERA. You see where this is going. He's got a 3.08 Sierra. He's doing a lot of things really well. You know, his walk rate's been a little bit higher than in the past couple of years, but his strikeout rate's back up above 30%. And on and on and on. Yeah, so he's basically pitching like a guy who should be good. His estimators show that he should have been good. And a couple of balls have I think it's really just kind of like a matter of like he's had some blow-ups, right? Rather than being consistently a guy who just gives up solo shots, he's had like a couple of days where things have just gone sour or some funky things have happened on some weekly hit balls, and that'll give you for a couple days at a time an ERA in the mid fours and make you feel bad.
Well, that's true. I mean, if it all happens in one game, as a closer, it doesn't really matter all that much. It gives you an ugly ERA number, but if you take that game out and the next 10 have been great, it's an inflated ERA number. And that's where averages are problematic, especially when you're talking about a stat like a save, where if he was terrible last week, it's a blown save, but ever since he's been able to get the, you know, finish the game, this goes back to our original question is how do we know, right? How can we count and how do we know? These are numbers that are indicative of Will Smith by the end of the season, probably being a really reliable reliever, somebody who hopefully starts to pick up more saves and get more opportunities.
Yeah. But the other side of that coin, right?
How do we know?
The other side of the coin is just like, can we count on Atlanta to like get their stuff together and win some baseball games?
Well, yeah. It's important. You can't save a loss. So,
And he's now I was at actually one of his more like dominant and like, all right, let's go home now. Saves. It's just on the road. of course, you're in DC.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been like that most of the time when he's pitched. It's just once in a while some fluky stuff happens. He's got to note here, 67.8 left on base rate, which is the lowest since 2016 for him. So obviously, you know, when like a third of the people you allow in base end up scoring, that's gonna maybe inflate your ERA a little bit.
But is that sustainable? Sustainable is the wrong word, but is that what's the most likely outcome, that it stays
that it or edges that, up that's to the high in, 70s,
being influenced
right?
by a fluke? Yeah, right.
So like, I will say though, if you were trying to look back on his past couple of years, there's been some really funny things that have happened just by virtue of like small samples. So he pitched 16 innings last year. He had a 100% left on base rate.
That's probably going to regress.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's had a 4.5 ERA last year because he had a lot of balls leave the yard. He had a 3.94 home run per yard nine last year. So it's just like things regress, and that doesn't always mean good things, and it doesn't always mean bad things. So Will Smith is, a really good example, I think, for me of like, we can make bad decisions as managers whenever we don't just actually remember to do these things. Instead, are just like in the app for like Yahoo or ESPN or whatever, you make all your decision just by sorting by some category because you got to find new guys because you're sitting there bored and want to make a drop because some dude seems like he's not good.
Or you're frustrated because you're losing games that you don't feel like you should lose, or losing weeks, I should say, that you don't feel like you should be losing. And I got to make some sort of I feel helpless. I got to do something. Yeah. I get that. I feel that way a lot. But, you know, sometimes what's the better part of valor? making sure that you're not doing something dumb. I don't think that's exactly how the saying goes, but I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. Let's talk about some of these platoon situations, because that can be really, really frustrating and to know which person to invest in. So we've got Cincy, Tampa, Oakland here on the show notes, on the rundown, and I'm going to let you pick where you want to go first. Cincy,
I want to spend the most time on Cincy, but I want to just kind of like give a quick note on Oakland. And they've been kind of just like going back and forth and just letting both of their co-closers like have a week at a time almost. I think that Deacon's better. And I think that a lot of people kind of reflected that. He's been pretty good the past couple of years. He's kind of old and has a different approach, but like they're pretty good about letting good people pitch in important situations. And somehow they're also like not terrible. I think that Oakland will probably have a few.
It's like Oakland. Oakland's tagline. Oakland Athletics, not terrible.
Yeah, they're respectable enough. I mean, they were leading the division by like several games at one point with like a negative run differential. It's kind of funky. I think that the thing there though is like that's a very different situation than elsewhere. And I wanted to bring it up kind of like as a this ain't normal sort of situation. It seems like they were just kind of like trading off a little bit. I don't know if that sticks forever, but it was kind of just like a funny note. And it's just kind of like the sort of frustrating where you're like, all right, if you benched Diekman in 1 week and he had got like three saves, that doesn't necessarily mean you should start him the next week. Funny. So I just want to say like sometimes people do funny things and they sort themselves out for the most part. And I don't want to treat that like I want to treat the other places where injury and dude not being good have kind of been the reality. We'll start with Cincy. Did you have Amir Garrett on any teams going into this year?
I didn't. Good for you. But I not because I wasn't willing to take him. I think other people just beat me to him, quite honestly. He had a lot of helium going in. And I think it was reasonable. I don't think it was, you know, misplaced, but it obviously hasn't.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like he's an example of a guy who is really going to get highlighted by some of my processes for who I like to go after and who might tell me will be good going forward. So Cincinnati has kind of like a closer and then a fireman, but sometimes so TJ Antone's like looks maybe like he's almost Josh Hader right now. I don't say that lightly. TJ Antone is first among all relievers in CSW per PA, which I promise sometime soon you're gonna get 5,000 words on me on why that is the stat that we should care about.
We're gonna get fast on the pod here to talk about it before you write the piece.
I've been waiting until I had 60 games of data this year so I could like do all my fun things with it.
Yeah,
we're gonna get that here in a few days and then I'm gonna write this piece. But like long story short, for all the numbers I've already run for it, basically if you want to like be able to estimate someone's strikeouts and stuff like that, which is what CSW is trying to do for the most part, like that's why it's good at estimating ERA, is because it correlates to strikeouts faster. Per PA evaluations look like the better. Anyways, he's the best reliever in the league by a margin in that metric. If you want to know who's been good about that in past years, guys like Devin Williams have shown up pretty well. Yeah. Basically, if you want to take a list of who's been good in terms of starting pitchers or relievers, it's just going to give you the best guys at the top in terms of like dominant strikeout throwing arms. TJ Antone is right there. Lucas Sims is also up there.
Yeah.
I should also note he's the current real closer there. Lucas Sims does not have pretty numbers necessarily though. And if you go dig in, what's happened? Well, they both kind of pitch half the time in Great American Launchpad. It's just going to kind of permanently make things a little bit messy. But I started out this because who was really good in this almost all of last year and finished the year like top 25 among all relievers? Amir Garrett. And what happened? Well, he wasn't himself. He didn't have the same command. Some things were a bit off. He's also a guy who I think gives it all emotionally every time he pitches. So I think that like maybe there are some days where that reflects itself in terms of just like having it and being willing to just absolutely go for a humiliation strikeout in some bad ways. But it also might mean that, like, you don't have it and you're frustrated and try to go for the humiliation strikeout to get yourself back on the track.
So, yeah. A little tin cup moment.
Yeah, so I'm cheering for Amir Garrett, to be clear. I love watching him pitch because it makes me excited to see what's going to happen next. And also, I just think that, like, we should be willing to kind of embrace some people who are, like, he's not a heel. But, like, he's got some, like, heelish qualities.
He does.
It's cool. Yep. It's fun.
It doesn't give you, like,
the... It does not help my ERAs, by the way, my ratios.
No, it definitely doesn't. Who am I thinking of? He's not Puig. You know, somebody like that, it takes it too far. But, so he's got a little bit of that in him. But it's almost, like, respectable, it's interesting because you can appreciate how much he cares.
It's like on-field passion and, like, I think the disrespect is, like, a really good thing sometimes in sports where it's like as a fuel and as, like, a, you know, like, I want to embarrass you, I want to humiliate you, I want to beat you really badly. I think that fuels great sports moments. I don't think that he's got any of, like, those sort of, like, off-the-field heel qualities that make someone, like, genuinely unlikable. Right. So, like, it's, like, kind of getting into some weird, like, non-baseball things about him. I want him to succeed.
That's okay.
My process is CSW stuff. Really said, this guy's got it. They're going to give him a chance after they shipped off Raisel Iglesias to Anaheim. Is that technically where it is? I have the sneaking suspicion that Anaheim is secretly, like, a front for some other town that they're in, so that the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim of somewhere else. Anyways, Orange County.
They don't need to work a third name into it.
Anyways, he's off in Anaheim, and here they are with this kind of a mess of a bullpen. I want to say, if you're trying to figure out whether or not they're worth owning at all or whether they're good, it's always going to come back to those, how good are their strikeout and walk numbers, because that's the only thing we can ever really trust. And CSW is kind of like adjacent to that, point. Right? Yeah. It's kind of like that, supposed to be the bleeding edge of strikeout stuff. And, TJ Antone, if you're in, like, a holds league or, like, a points league, go get him. Like, he just looks so good.
Yeah, I've had him. Yeah. He's a big part of my strategy, even in leagues with saves, is to just get those high ratio, high leverage guys that may slide into the role. But even while they're not, they're getting you strikeouts. They might be pitching two innings at an outing, so they might be getting you a little bit more than another reliever would. So I do have him in several places. You mentioned something, and I'm going to push us here into our pass fail segment because we've had to skip it. I don't think we're going to make it to our off the books again, which is the park factors tool that you so badly want to talk about.
I think we will can probably spend just a tiny bit on this pass fail because we already talked about it. So just bleed us into it.
Yeah. So what I want to hear from you is, and I just put this out there, like, pass fail holds.
Yeah.
Do you like this?
I'm fine with that. I think that holds are a great counterbalance because the thing about them is they still happen less than saves do for, like, the really, really elite saves guys. So it kind of just distorts things where talent for strikeouts and ratios matters more because the bottom end is a little bit better, right? The 40th best reliever in terms of, like, a save and hold league is better than the 30 or 40th best reliever in just a save league, right? In terms of, like, the number of saves and holds you can get from them. And that means that more of the value that we actively care about ends up being ratios and strikeouts. And that's, I think, where you want to land. Now, are they perfect? No. Are they silly? Yeah, they kind of are. But it's a sort of silly that we can kind of all just kind of, like, shake hands, take a deep breath. And, Victor Gonzalez has been really good in holds this year. And it's really funny because he's kind of just like Lugie.
Yeah.
And I roster him in a league. And it makes me laugh in a fun way. It's weird.
Sure.
And I think I'm good with it.
The thing I wish about holds, and I will say I'm giving him a pass too. I like it. I'm in a league that moved to saves plus holds. I really do prefer it. Maybe part of it is because I hate having to draft for saves so much that it gives me a little bit of an out. But those people who still go for saves tend to still win that category.
Yep. More opportunity.
Week to week. So it's exactly. The one thing that drives me nuts is that if you're going to call a hold, I don't think your team should have to have the lead. I think if you come into a tie game and don't give anything up, that should also be a hold. But alas, they don't care.
I actually agree with you there. Yeah.
But I think it's unfair to say that you come into a high leverage situation where the team just doesn't happen to be ahead and it's not a hold. All right. Well, then we've carved out some space, Alex, and I don't want to shortchange it, which is why I was kind of saying we'll push it. But if you want to talk a little bit about this tool, so this would be off the books. So this is a total segue away from our closer conversation. But the Park Factors tool, talk a little bit about it, what its function and purpose is, what's going on with that, and why you, I'm assuming, like
it. Yeah, so basically it's an attempt to solve with a little more sophistication and a little bit more like liveness to it. The same problem that Dan Richards set out to solve a while ago, whenever he was trying to figure out like which parks have been best at turning barrels into home runs or non-barrels into home runs. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Fast kind of looked at that as well. And basically Tom Tango and the team at like Savant were like, hey, let's actually just do this. So what it will tell you is that like, you know, we're typically looking at park factors in terms of like how many runs they allow, which is kind of imperfect because there's like multiple different ways you can get there. And the really fun thing about this tool is it'll tell you basically like on an adjusted, like if 100 is average and like 120 is a lot more and 80 is like, it's like 120 would be like 120% of league average. Really easy. So if you go look at this page and you can actually break them out park by park, and there's a whole bunch of other features, but what it'll do is it'll tell you if a park is giving up more home runs than league average. If a park then separately gives up more singles or doubles than league average, hits overall.
Okay.
It'll even talk to you about like strikeouts and walks. You can see some really interesting things into BABIP in general. So basically it just breaks out all of the different ways that a park can influence offense. And it's really interesting that the trends that emerge are really obvious when you see them and really fun. So the parks that have a ton of lawn, essentially, give up a ton of singles and doubles. The parks that are like smaller or that play at really hot temperatures, especially, you see this like Camden.
Yep, that makes
sense.
A ton
of home runs. The parks where, you know, like if the way that it suppresses runs is by like having a really thick atmosphere, you might have both fewer singles and doubles and home runs. You see that a little bit for San Francisco. You know, the kind of like it's got a huge lawn and it's really hot, so the ball still leaves, or like the air is really thin, so the ball still leaves. Like Coors is like up there for everything, but you can just kind of like start to see like how are these parks similar, how are they different. You can see the narratives and how they affect each other, and it's really interesting. The only thing it lacks is directionality, and that's one of the things that Dan Richards' piece had done really well, is it broke out lefty versus righty stuff, which is just I think so essential.
Yeah, that is pretty big.
And I think that could be incorporated in the future. So I'm not leaving that out, but I just want to say they got all the data. They had a really good job of cleaning it up and displaying it in some really, really cool ways. And I plan on citing it whenever we want to talk about, you know, like guys who end up getting traded later on this year, inevitably, because it's just a really, really good tool for that. It'll tell you exactly what you can kind of expect in terms of like the broad stuff. I think especially for pitchers, we can kind of get a feel for it. Like if a guy's like a fly ball pitcher and he's moving from, you know.
Yeah, right. So we did a Park Factors episode, and this is a tool that has emerged since we did that episode.
Kind of like almost a response, new, if you will. Not quite. Might have never that one.
Yeah, that would be amazing. We heard that episode that Matt and Alex did, and now we have to come out with this tool. So go check that out. And, you know, I'm going to take just a moment here to encourage those of you who are with us still to send us some emails and send us some questions on Twitter. We'd love to be able to do kind of a mailbag and go back over some things that we've talked about in the past and see how things that we've said before have panned out. So please do send us those comments, those questions. That's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Anything else you want to add here, Alex, before we sign off?
I think the only thing that I really, truly want to add is that it's been really, really fun to see who, like, 60 games in has been doing really well. And just, like, as we're starting to, like, really get a feel for, like, we can believe it, the number of guys who have been just doing really well this year and it's been fun to track has been really high. And I want to say, like, as we're one 2020 season worth of baseball done or so, it's been a good short season so far, and I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it has. It's not been exactly as we expected, and it's been different, but that does make it engaging. Makes it frustrating sometimes, but it does make it engaging for sure.
We're here, like, ready to debate here in the future, like, Shohei Ohtani and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for like, AL MVP. That's, I realize that part of that is that Mike Trout isn't playing baseball right now, But part of it is that they've been really good.
Yeah, that's true. They've been really good. Yeah. I actually want to hear the arguments for Shohei Ohtani winning MVP and Cy Young independently. Independently. That would be fantastic if we can get there. Not because he's been such a dominant pitcher, he deserves both, but because as a hitter, he deserves the MVP, and as a pitcher, he deserves the Cy Young. That would be a fantastic world, conversation.
I hope we can get ourselves there.
All right. Well, thank you so much at home for joining us, for listening. Alex, thanks for being a part of this one as always. And if you could go ahead and let the people at home know where they could find us.
Well, they can find you on Twitter at @TheCorkedMatt. I'm on Twitter at @Chase_Rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.